Today is January 1st, 2014, and this is episode number 237 of the Apple Context Machine, a podcast for the Mac Observer. I'm Jeff Gamet, managing editor at TMO.
And I'm Brian Chaffin, cranberry farmer. To get the full story on anything we cover in this podcast, you can visit macobserver.com/ACM. And if you would like to comment on or question anything about the show, shoot us a note at acm@macobserver.com.
My problem, Brian, is that I'm clearly a 12-year-old because I immediately assumed that your title was a euphemism for something.
Nope. I'm a cranberry farmer.
You got the big boots and everything, so you can wade out there.
I got the rake. I got the boat. I got the net. I got the swamp somewhere. I am good to go for farming the cranberries.
That's awesome. It reminds me of one of my nieces when she was five, and asked her, "What do you want to be when you grow up?" And she goes, "I want to be a cow milker."
That's fantastic.
It is.
That's fantastic. I'm assuming you took the opportunity to explain what a milkmaid is.
No.
Oh, man, opportunity lost, dude.
What I did instead was asked her if she had already looked at the type of stool she would want to get and if she'd considered what her hourly output would be. And she looked at me as if I'd slapped her in the face with a fish.
Speaking of slapping people in the face with the fish, I believe it's a holiday today.
See, this is how dedicated we are.
I know. So, you know, there's only one thing to say, and that would be, happy birthday.
And I bet everyone's wondering, how is it that Jeff can be so spry? How is it that he isn't sounding like he's horribly hungover? It's because I'm that dedicated.
People. You are that dedicated. You are that dedicated, sir.
So I am.
So you are. So we have a New Year's Day show, and we're going to crib liberally from something Dave wrote this morning. And do kind of a look back at what we thought were the most important stories of 2013. And also,
now, your timing is off. Wibbly wobbly, timey wimey.
Yeah.
Dave actually wrote that yesterday.
Oh, of course. That was yesterday.
That was yesterday.
Because today is New Year's Day.
Right. I'm assuming you just stayed up all night. So technically for you, it's still yesterday.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Duh. Because that is what I do.
Right. And for me, it doesn't matter what day it is because TARDIS.
That's right. That's true. That is a good point. So we have a list here. All right. We have a list. You have the list right in front of you? I gave you a copy of the list.
I have a list.
All right. Shall we just start at the top?
Sure.
All right.
That sounds great. Hold on. I'm scrolling up through my list. Okay, first thing on the list, 2013.
Yay! Well, I think one of the biggest stories from a business perspective for Apple would be being convicted of antitrust violations, being convicted of being the ringleader of a dastardly scheme to fix and raise iBook prices or eBook prices with iBooks.
And I have a slightly different spin on the same story.
Okay.
And my spin is 2013 is the year that the United States government chose to endorse Amazon as the worldwide monopoly on book sales.
Yes, there is that aspect. You know, we talked a lot about that story. Neither of us understands why the DOJ went after Apple in the first place, let alone how Apple could have been convicted.
I'm baffled because the evidence that was presented to me clearly shows that Apple did not collude.
Correct. Yeah, the book industry was already moving towards the final solution. That the real problem was Amazon's control over the ebook market by its practice of dumping bestsellers in order to gain share.
Yes, and Amazon was an advisor to the DOJ on the whole thing.
Yeah, which is just weird. And the fact that Judge Coates seemed to make up her mind before the case, although...
You know, on one hand, yes. But on the other hand, what happened before before the trial started? That's actually really common, where both sides will go to the judge and ask for their opinion on what they think the status of both sides is. And in this case, Judge Coates said, well, I think that the DOJ has the stronger case. And of course, I'm paraphrasing here, but that's the gist of what she said.
Yeah, and I've always... That's always been my reaction to that aspect of the story as well. And the only reason I mention it now is because I get hung up on the fact that the evidence did so clearly show that the DOJ didn't have a case to me. Of course, I'm not a judge and I'm not a lawyer. So,
I've played a lawyer, and that's how it looked to me, that the DOJ did not have a case.
Well, and there you have it, the end. But I don't understand it, and I don't understand why Apple was assigned a monitor. That's the ongoing part of this story. That's been a big deal in November and December. This monitor that was assigned, the fact that there was a monitor assigned in a relatively minor case where the things that Apple did, even the judge said, aren't illegal on their face. And you know, she assigned a monitor, which is weird, and then she...
More than weird. In this type of a situation, it's unprecedented. You don't assign a monitor in a case where it's a short-term violation, so to speak.
That's true. Well, that said, though, Apple really has showed no... To be fair, Apple has showed absolutely zero. What's the word when you regret? There's a word for it. There's
remorse.
Remorse. Apple has showed no remorse whatsoever. As a matter of fact, Apple continues to insist that it was innocent. But Apple is, in theory, complying by... Well, first of all, there's the fact that the people with whom Apple supposedly colluded had already settled and canceled the offending agreements with Apple even before the case went to trial. So exactly where and why do they need to be monitored? That part doesn't make any sense either.
No, and I cannot give you a good answer. And grasping at straws, I cannot give you a good answer.
Yeah.
It feels very kangaroo court to me.
Yeah, I wouldn't call it a kangaroo court. To me, it's felt more like a situation where the judge just knew that there was something wrong here, and she wasn't going to let the facts get in the way of that understanding.
It's also as if the government wanted to make an example of someone.
Well, that's true. The DOJ under Eric Holder and under President Obama has been a much more activist DOJ. It's gone over a lot. It's been a lot more aggressive in going after several aspects of corporate behavior that have pretty much been given a greener and greener light over preceding decades. That's for sure. I mean, that's just all there is to that. It's a much more activist DOJ.
Yeah. Yes.
In terms of
that,
business.
That's very true. That's very true.
And by and large, I'm actually for that. I just wish in this case it had been they'd been an activist DOJ that went after, say the way Walmart is destroying business in America, or the way Amazon is destroying business in America, not the way that Apple was actually creating a more vibrant and that Apple led the way towards a more vibrant ebook market that offered a better experience to me, the consumer.
Well, maybe part of this is about having a high profile win for the government. And for the general public, it wouldn't surprise me if they see what happened as a positive, because I'll use my mother as the litmus test here. My mother is not following the fine details of this case.
Sure.
Like we did. All she knows is what she saw on the nightly news.
Sure.
Whichever talking head that she prefers told her that Apple was convicted of conspiring to destroy the book market. And for the DOJ and for whatever government agencies are involved in this, that's good publicity.
Yeah, it's a good point. It's a good point. It's a good point. The thing is that they're gonna. I really think they're gonna lose this on appeal.
I think so too.
And in particular, then we have this monitor business. By the way, we're on our first topic. We have like a dozen things to go over, and we're still talking about the first thing. There's going to be...
Yeah, we do.
you sit back and buckle in, folks. There's going to be... what am I trying to say? The monitor thing.
There's going to be fallout.
There is going to be fallout for this because I don't think this is I don't think that okay, so let me try this again. Michael Bromwich selected as monitor, and he was selected as monitor in theory because he is an expert monitor. He's got lots of experience from this. He actually has a very illustrious career doing a lot of onerous
monetary things.
Yes, plus prosecuting the Iran-Contra. The few prosecutions that actually happened in the Iran-Contra affair. I mean, he has a very solid career as both a jurist and as a court monitor, mm-hmm. as you said. And the problem is he doesn't have any antitrust experience. So that from talking to someone in the legal field who is an attorney, and I don't want to name.
It wasn't me.
It wasn't you, because you only played one.
Right.
And I think there's a lot of questions about choosing someone without the antitrust experience to be the number one person. And in addition to this, she has this ongoing relationship with this person. It's not necessarily a person. It's a personal relationship, not like a romantic relationship or anything. But and the reason why this is a problem is because judges in theory hold themselves to an ethical standard where they avoid the appearance of impropriety, not just impropriety, but the appearance. So even if there is nothing improper about her having chosen him, because it has the appearance of impropriety, she should have let someone else do the choosing.
Right. Even if they chose the exact same person.
Absolutely.
Someone else should have done that. I agree. Yeah, she should have recused herself from making that choice.
Now, there is a lot of talk out there that this is some sort of quid pro quo thing where she chose him so he could rack up a bunch of bills and he's going to end up doing a favor for her, giving her money. That to me is nonsense. I don't buy that even for a second.
Neither do I. And to me, that feels far too TV episode.
Yeah. And it's too stupid for two such incredibly smart people to do, because if that happened, they will get busted.
And they will get busted in a really bad way.
Yeah, both their careers would be over.
Oh, yeah. And there would be jail time.
Well, possibly. Not always. It is there is an element of politics here.
There is. But I think that element of politics would play out in a very grandiose theatrical way, much like slamming Apple did.
Yeah, and true. It's very possible.
Yeah, I can totally see jail time happening out of that.
And that's why I think this is such a big story, because first of all, it is there is an ongoing disruption. And you have the fact that Mr. Bromwich clearly believes that he has been charged by Judge Coates not to monitor compliance, which is what Judge Coates' theoretical order was for, but to actually conduct an ongoing antitrust probe within Apple.
And that's not what he should be doing.
No, there's absolutely, it is incredibly improper for that to be happening. There's no legal framework for it to even be happening.
No, there's not. And depending on how that would play out, taking it to an extreme, I could see where someone could start claiming double jeopardy. I mean, that's way extreme.
Yeah.
But, I mean, at this point, the conviction has already happened. There is no need for an ongoing investigation into whether or not Apple committed the crimes that they are charged with, because they have already been convicted.
Right. And Apple has not been charged with any antitrust violations in any other areas. And if they were, that would have to be tried before you can have a court monitor doing investigative work. It's crazy.
Right.
And so this is a huge disruption for Apple. Now, mind you, if Apple did something legitimately wrong, then disruption is one of the prices they have to pay. But I think that the disruptions that they're facing are completely out of whack with what happened.
Yes. Also, if the monitor is there to be collecting more evidence, then there's a serious problem. Because if there wasn't enough evidence for a conviction, then they should not have convicted.
No. Well, that's true. And the fact, yeah, and they've already been convicted, so you don't need any more evidence. It's just weird. The whole thing is weird. And I think the appellate court is going to toss out the monitorship, and I think the appellate court is probably going to, not probably, I think the appellate court is going to toss out the conviction.
I think the conviction will definitely be overturned. Yep.
And if that doesn't happen, I still think the Supreme Court will. I think this conservative Supreme Court will.
It's going to get overturned. If it's not at the appellate level, then if it goes all the way to the Supreme Court, it will be overturned there.
Yeah. So anyway, big story 2013. are we done with the show yet?
And that's this week.
Like all these other things, man. iPhone 5S, iPad Air, iOS 7, 64-bit, A7. A huge year for iOS and the iOS platform.
Yes. Okay, so I'll start with iOS 7. This was the year Apple basically gutted the operating system and gave us the foundation for what they have planned moving forward. It always hurts when Apple does this, but it's also necessary, because in the end, what we get, hopefully, is better.
And Apple showed us that they are not locked into carrying on what outsiders perceive as Steve's vision.
I would see it as a very big problem if Apple was focusing on what would Steve do.
Yeah. So both very big deals. You got the iPhone 5S, the most highly regarded iPhone ever. People love this thing. It's selling in record numbers. This is going to be another record December quarter for Apple. The 64-bit A7 processor that went into it is such a big deal.
It's a big deal also because Apple caught all their competition flat-footed.
Yep.
No one was expecting this.
And Apple's just way ahead of everybody.
Yeah, I would say Apple is 2 years ahead of the competition on 64-bit mobile processors now.
At least 2 years when you consider the fact that Google doesn't even have a stated 64-bit plan.
Samsung does. Now, to be fair, their plan is, we're going to do that too.
Right. Right. Absolutely. Absolutely. But I don't know what operating system they're going to run it on. And I mean, and the first 64-bit version of Android that comes out is going to be a dog. And
of course,
it's going to have app incompatibility issues. It's going to be a mess. So at least 2 years ahead on this.
Yeah.
The iPad Air, thinner, faster, awesome.
Also, what I consider to be the first serious redesign of the iPad form factor mm-hmm. since it was introduced.
Mm-hmm. And to be able to make it so much thinner and have so much less battery and offer slightly longer battery life is just stunning. No one else can do that.
We live in the future.
We live in the future. No one else can do it. No one can touch Apple in that regards. So yeah, it was a really big year. Of course, that was obviously in the last quarter, but a really big year for Apple. That's good stuff.
Absolutely.
Mac Pro, new, awesome.
Can't innovate my. How do you do?
Tushy, yep. The amazing design. I really enjoyed. I think in between the last show and this show. I did a little editorial about someone else's research where they priced out the components it would take to match the Mac Pro in terms of mostly in terms of spec or I should say in terms of spec they almost met it, and in terms of form factor as close as they could get.
I really liked the piece you wrote. I thought that was really nice, and I found it really interesting that they couldn't really match what the Mac Pro is.
They can match it on some things.
On some things, but if you look at the whole package, they couldn't match what the Mac Pro is. But they could match parts. And to do it, they had to build a computer that cost more than a Mac Pro, and not just a couple bucks. It was several hundred dollars.
Well, it was $2,000.
See?
That's $2,000. Over $11,000 compared to the $9,500 Mac Pro.
That's right. Yeah.
And to be fair, to be absolutely fair, there are ways to build a cheaper PC that's going to offer still a fantastic and amazing performance. But what am I trying to say? But if you want to actually match what Apple's doing, you can't do it.
No, and the point of the exercise was to match Apple's computer.
Yes. Yeah, the point of their exercise was to match Apple's computer. Right. Right.
And it cost a couple grand more
yeah.
to kind of match.
Yeah. And and no one's going to touch that form factor.
No. No. Someone will make a cylindrical PC, but what they'll do is they'll take like a real tiny board and put it in a big tube.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Let's see here. We have Mavericks was released. A pretty big advancement for OS X.
Yeah. And that's cool, but to me the big news in Mavericks is that Apple chose to give it away for free.
Yeah,
that one I didn't see coming. I thought it would be $19.95, like they have done, or $19.99, like they've done with previous operating systems.
Yeah, quite frankly, it's still worth $129.
It is, but I figured they'd set the precedent. It'll be just under $20 to create a perceived value,
mm-hmm.
and. Instead, they were like, nope, it's free.
Yeah, that is amazing. And I'm not going to say that it threatens Microsoft because, first of all, their business models are different.
They're very different. However, there are people that will look at that and question why do they have to pay for Windows when they can get Mac OS for free.
I would tweak that just a little bit. I think that it recasts the value proposition. Recast the value.
Oh, it definitely
argument.
Does.
And that's a little bit different than people saying, why should I have to pay for Windows? I don't think it doesn't take too much effort to say, well, Microsoft doesn't sell the hardware. So, of course, you got to pay for the operating system. You know, that's just the way it is. Plus, the, you know, the I can buy a bunch of really crappy hardware for less money anyway. But there are people, as you said, who will look at it and go, I don't have to pay for operating system upgrades. And for, you know, businesses in particular, that could be a big deal. For consumers, for a lot of consumers, especially entry-level consumers, you know, non-creative pros, a lot of customers like that don't ever bother to upgrade OS X anyway.
Right. And on the Windows side, they're buying $250 or $300 computers.
Right.
And they're not going to upgrade Windows there either.
Right. And they probably can't.
But that's just nitpicking. Right. But yeah, by the time they get to a point where they would want to upgrade, they have to replace the computer.
Right. So yeah, it's really interesting that Apple did this. And, you know, Apple is effectively doubling down on the fact that they're going to sell hardware at a profit.
Yes. And adding to that double down, we have the fact that Apple is giving away the iWork suite with new computers.
Yeah.
So and more and free software.
New iPhones and iPads, too.
Yes. You remember when the original Macintosh came out? You'd buy the computer and all the software you needed to do whatever you wanted, unless you had real specialized needs. It came with the computer. So you took it out of the box and you could just use it. That, to me, that's kind of what Apple is doing again. Because you can get the iWork suite, so you have a word processor, a spreadsheet, and a presentation application. You get the iLife suite, so you can make music, you can do all of your photo stuff, and you can make movies. And all of that stuff, along with your web browser, email, it's just there.
Mm-hmm.
For a lot of people, they won't need to buy other apps. For the people that do need to buy other apps, great. There's the Mac App Store and third-party websites. And there are plenty of options. But like if my mom, going back to my litmus test, were to go out and buy a new Mac today, she would not need to buy any other software
right.
ever.
Right. Right.
Yeah, that's really powerful.
Yeah, big. That was a big development. Apple undersold it, and I think that story is going to get bigger as time goes on.
I think you're right.
Speaking of which, Apple brought manufacturing back to the U.S. in 2013 with the Mac Pro. It's being made in Austin. And they made this major investment down in Arizona, buying a huge manufacturing facility, some of which is being leased out. GDT something or another, I forget what the company's called, but a company that's making Sapphire for Apple in Apple's facility.
That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, it is. It's very interesting. It's you know, no one brings back manufacturing to the U.S. Once it leaves the U.S., it stays. Or that's been the you know, the aphorism, the truism.
And yet,
for years now,
what is Apple doing?
What is Apple doing? And we didn't talk a lot about it, but the thing about the Arizona facility is that it is really large, and all the focus was on the Sapphire that's going to be made there and what Apple's going to do with the Sapphire. And that is really cool. That is super cool. It's a really interesting story, but there is more space there. What is Apple going to be doing with that space too?
Yeah. See, that's what makes it more interesting.
Yeah.
First, they need all this Sapphire for something. Mm-hmm. And now they have all this space to make more mystery things.
Right. And this could be a situation where they're opening up, where they're going to be doing their own manufacturing like they're doing in Austin. Or it could be a situation where they intend to have an arrangement. See, part of Apple's model here is to make major investments in buying machinery and buying facilities, and then letting the experts run their business on Apple's stuff, because that way Apple controls it, and Apple, you know, it's Apple's all about control. So Apple could be doing more of that with this facility, or they could be planning on using this space for their own manufacturing too.
You know, in a way, it kind of reminds me of the scene in Monty Python's Meaning of Life, where they're in the hospital and they're talking about the machine that the hospital owns. It goes ping. Mm-hmm. And the hospital bought the machine, then leases it back to itself for the tax break. And in my head, that was so, so much funnier. Don't worry, we can edit it out. No one will ever know.
No one will know. No one will know. Yeah, so that's going to be an interesting story going forward, and it was an interesting story this year too. I think that something that is sort of happening in front of our eyes is that people are realizing that Samsung has no clothes.
I have this image of people running naked right now, and it's okay. I had to pause for a minute because they were all good-looking people. Unlike Samsung.
Excellent.
That's not what you meant about clothes.
No, that's not what I meant. I'm talking about the emperor having no clothes. That you know, all this talk about how awesome Samsung is, both from Apple's detractors and from Samsung itself, and we're seeing there's nothing behind that. You know, we have the first major product where they can't really copy Apple, which is the Galaxy Gear smartwatch.
Oh, man, and what a disaster that is.
It's a dog.
I mean, how crazy is that? Samsung rushed a prototype product to market as a shipping product based solely on rumors that Apple might be making a watch.
Right.
I mean, talk and about the market result is power. A disaster.
Yes. It's absolutely true. And it's a disaster. The product is a dog. No one wants it. No one's buying it. Samsung is spending a ton of money advertising it to
creepy
no effect.
Creepy advertising.
Yeah. Well, there's that too. And, I mean, Samsung even lost a patent infringement suit against Apple in Korea. And Korea,
that's harsh.
Very Korean courts are traditionally very favorable towards Korean companies. They continue to not win anything against Apple anywhere else. And They lost on their home turf. They've got no clothes, and I think that some people are beginning to see it. And I think that that this will be the, you know, Samsung's completely unearned reputation of being an innovator peaked and ebbed and is still ebbing, and it started in 2013.
Yeah. And it's unfortunate because Samsung makes such a wide range of products. I mean, they could stop making smartphones and tablets and still have a very strong, very viable business. And they do have innovation in other markets, but this is so high profile that it is, I'd say it's staining their clothing in all the other markets, but we've just established they're naked. Yep. So it's just staining them.
Yeah, it's true. It's true. Now, I don't want to spend a lot of time on this, but I do think that one of the biggest stories of the year was Bitcoin.
Bitcoin. I don't know if I've heard of that. I don't recall you mentioning this before.
Exactly. I'm not obsessed at all. I am, however, giving a session at Macworld. You're doing a session at Macworld, aren't you?
I have two sessions at Macworld.
What are you doing?
Well, first, tell me about your session. Then I'll tell you about mine.
No, fair enough. It's going to be how to manage and mine Bitcoins on your Mac. So it's definitely going to be aimed at people who are beginners who are looking for information on how to understand and get into Bitcoins using their Mac.
That's really cool.
Fun. Yeah, it'll be fun. What are you doing?
I am doing a session on how you can use fitness technology to get healthy and stay healthy, which for me,
excellent,
is like a perfect fit considering how much weight I lost.
Yeah, you've done a good job with that.
Why, thank you. And then the other session that I'm doing is about wearable technology and what's cool and what's not.
I just had a great idea for your fitness session.
Mm-hmm.
So you're nowhere to be seen, And I come running in right after it starts. And I get up. I get up to the bike. Hold on just a second. Let me catch my breath. I'm going to be talking to you about fitness. That would be hysterical. Probably not a great idea. Paul would have both of our heads, but it would be funny.
Yeah, well, it would be really funny. Yeah, that would be really funny.
Yeah, so yeah, we're both doing sessions this year. Should be good. And so Bitcoin's, like I said, I don't want to get too deep into it. I just think it was a really big story. Value of Bitcoins rose from like $40 to $1,200. It's back down to in between $700 and $800 right now.
That's still a lot of money.
A lot of money, a lot of attention, a lot of headlines, a lot of stories, a lot of mindshare, and it's going to keep getting bigger in 2014.
Awesome.
Yeah. So, speaking of 2014.
Yes.
What do you think is going to happen in 2014? It's a segue that actually makes sense.
That is so rare. Well, once a year.
I'm slipping.
Yeah, once a year. And we've got that out of the way.
Once a year. That's like, all right. I'm set.
Yeah, we're off the hook. We can go back to our crappy transitions.
Yeah, excellent.
All right, so I will start with wearable tech, which ties in with my session at Macworld. I think that this will be the year that we see big innovation in the wearable tech market. I mean, it's so ready to explode, and we have so many companies that are working on products that fit into the wearable technology category that go beyond wearing a watch that's basically a secondary display for whatever phone is in your pocket.
A poor one at that.
Yes. And there
are some good, I'm sorry, that was aimed at the Galaxy Gear. There are definitely some interesting devices out there like the Pebble.
Yeah, and I knew you were talking about the Galaxy Gear. Yes. And yeah, the Pebble is interesting, and there are some interesting products that are on the horizon. But the whole wearable tech thing, I think, is going to see a fundamental shift in what is designed, because this is the year Apple's going to start rolling out products.
Yes, I agree with that. This is going to be the year that Apple releases a new product category after Steve Jobs.
And that's a big thing, because we haven't seen a true new product category without Steve Jobs at the helm.
Correct. And, you know, Tim Cook's detractors, and anybody who has a vested mental interest in Apple finally failing like they know that Apple should have failed all along, those folks have all been saying quite loudly that Apple can't innovate without Steve Jobs. That Steve Jobs was the only reason that Apple innovated, and this is going to be the year that Apple shows the world that Steve Jobs was serious when he said that the product he was most proud of building, the thing that he was most proud of building and making, is Apple, and that he made Apple to outlive him and to keep going without him.
And I believe that will happen. And I just realized what I said was wrong. That this, when I said this will be the first time that Apple has introduced a new product category without Steve Jobs, that's not true. This will be the first time Apple successfully does that, because they introduced the PDA without Steve Jobs.
Oh, that's true. Post Steve Jobs, though.
Yes.
So yeah, I mean, since Steve Jobs died, because really, you've got Apple, you've got three phases of Apple. You've got the early Apple, you've got the Apple after Steve was quit before he could get fired, and then you've got the Apple since he came back. And I guess now we're in the fourth phase, which is the
post Jobs, Apple,
yeah, phase. After he died. Mm-hmm. AJ, Anno Jobsino.
Yeah, and during the dark phase when he wasn't there, that would be BJ.
No. Stop it.
What I say?
So, yeah, I think that's going to happen. And I think that whatever Apple is working on in terms of expanding their presence in the TV industry, I think that'll happen this year, too.
You know,
we're going to see an expansion of Apple's TV offerings.
Okay, now, I will accept that. I think that we're going to see growth in the Apple TV product line. I do not, however, think we will see an Apple-branded television.
I know you've not been on board that train.
I have not. And I am the first to admit I was not on the smaller iPad train, and yet I have an iPad mini sitting on my desk right now, and I love it. However, the television just doesn't make sense to me.
If Apple can do it at once in the interface department, Apple will have a TV to go to present it.
Yeah, but they can do all that with Apple TV, and then all you're doing is providing the display that connects to it.
I hear you. I'm just saying that if Apple can do everything at once, it will also have a TV. I think you can probably do it you should be able to do it with an Apple TV set-top box too, but I think that Apple will also have a TV.
Yeah. No.
I know.
Well,
I know.
We'll see, but
you're going to be wrong on that one too, but we'll have to see. We will have to see. The funny thing is that time is on your side. I think the longer we go, the less likely it is that Apple will do this.
Yeah, I do have to agree with you on that. Yeah.
On the same front, I think that we're going to see a larger iPad this year.
There was a time when I would have adamantly argued with you.
There's a time when you did adamantly argue with mostly John. I was backing John up. John Martellaro was on the larger iPad train first.
Yeah, and I was so not. Of course, when John got on the larger iPad train, what he was describing to me was basically like taking a 23-inch cinema display and taking the foot pedestal off of it and walking around with that.
Fair enough. We won't see that. I'm in complete agreement with you there.
No, we won't see that. But I do think that there is a bigger iPad coming, and it will be the iPad Pro.
Yes. Yes, I think so. Now, speaking...
Just don't.
Speaking of new devices... Wait,
do we have to start off release the year like this?
Yes.
No.
Yes.
No. Yes. Can we just call it the iPhone that shall not be named?
No. Well, that is funny.
Can we call it the Voldemort?
I kind of want to do that just because it's so funny, but I know that calling it the other thing is going to upset you so much.
Can we just call it the Voldemort? No. Just this once.
No. Apple released the iFablet.
God, why do you do... it's like you want me to die inside.
Oh, goodness gracious. I'm going to see you like in a week, too, in Vegas. You're gonna like do something really horrible to me.
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I'll deserve it, so that's okay. It's worth it. It's worth it. But I think
that you Apple say that now.
Will release a larger iPhone this year. I think that this will be the year that they work out the kinks so that they can do the screen that Apple wants to do without the compromises that Tim Cook talked about in the past.
I don't know. I'm not sold on a larger screen iPhone. Apple has been hardcore about you can use it one-handed.
Yes.
And if you make it any bigger than it is, unless you have giant mutant hands, and I'm using my hands as the standard, anything bigger than mine is a mutant, then you can't use it one-handed. I can barely use...
Come on, dude. We're talking about the company where a few months after Steve Jobs said, no videos, it's about the music, stupid, they released the iPad video, or whatever they called that thing. The iPod video.
Yeah, that was smokescreen. That was an XJ11 technique.
And Tim Cook said that large screens are interesting. Clearly, some people want them, but there are compromises. We won't release a compromised product. That, to me, it's everything you need to know. When Apple can release the large screen device that does not have the compromises that Tim Cook was talking about, they will do so. Because right now, they're leaving money on the table. They're not losing anything. I mean, iPhones outsell all those large screen Android devices that Android fans and Apple haters are so keen on. But they're leaving some money on the table. Profitable money. Money at the high end.
I don't know if they're leaving money on the table at the high end. If they Absolutely. Were, if they were leaving money on the table at the high end, I don't think they would have introduced the iPhone 5C.
Well, no, but that's about taking money off the middle end. The iPhone right. 5C is all about the end of the end of the spectrum. Because making the 5C is cheaper than making the iPhone 5.
Okay, so Apple's modus operandi has been you saturate the market, and then you work your way down. And they have not saturated the high-end smartphone market.
No, but they can help saturate that high-end phone market with a larger device to complement the very successful 5S.
And now it's no longer a one-handed device. Now it becomes an undersized iPad mini.
Yeah, whatever. What, it's the same thing. We figured out how to do we talked about the compromises necessary in the past, and we figured out how to do it right. That's they've done this repeatedly, in particular under Steve, where he said that what everybody else is doing is wrong and that those products are flawed, and then but we figured out how to do it right. This one-handed thing is going to end up it'll just be we figured out how to do it right.
And I'm totally grasping at straws here. The way I could see Apple doing a bigger screen mm-hmm. would be to do the convex display. Not the concave display, but the convex display. Where you can have more surface space, but you're not making the phone wider. And it would not be a dramatic curve, so it would only be slightly wider.
I think that's why Samsung released its really bad curved Galaxy device.
And they didn't know the difference between concave and convex.
Yeah.
Like, well, hey, look, guys, we just made a curved screen display iPhone. We mean Android phone. And look, and now it rocks on the desk. And you want to buy one, yeah? Yeah.
I sat in on the meeting. It hurt. My eyes bled.
No doubt.
I was weeping into my eyes, and there's blood in my hands. And I went, stigmata? And then realized, no, it's just blood dripping.
Fair enough. So, do you think anything's going to be done with the other Mac product lines this year?
I think that we saw our big changes in the Mac product line in 2013. And
2012 with the iMac.
True. 2012 with the iMac. That's right.
Those didn't really ship in volume until 2013.
Right. So I get off on a technicality on that one.
Absolutely. No, I'm totally with you.
So in 2014, I think that we will see performance improvements or storage space, that kind of stuff. But we're not going to see. Yeah, it's more of the same. Yeah. And
yeah, I agree. I'm not looking for anything major. I mean, of course, we'll get evolutionary upgrades to certainly the MacBook Air and Pro lines. There'll be some new version of the iMac that'll come out. The Mac Mini is at this point the device that has gone the longest without any kind of major changes.
And they could definitely make some big changes there.
They could, yeah. Yeah, they could. So, we might see something really interesting with the Mac Mini. But I'm not going to hold my breath. It won't surprise me if we just get more of this, bigger, better.
Yeah. You know what they could do is go to a 64-bit processor. Oh, wait. They already did.
a long time ago.
Yes. And they could redesign the case. So it's like a neat-looking aluminum slab. Oh, wait.
They did that, too.
Yeah, you know, if they wanted to redesign the look of the Mini, I guess they could do something to make it look more like the Mac Pro. But I don't see that happening. I think any changes we see to the Mini this year, although I would love to see a really cool redesign of that product, I think we will see more of the same, where we get performance enhancements.
What if they did a circle instead of a square?
Well, that's what I was thinking. If
I see, yeah, that'd be interesting. Now you had a pre-show. You had a point about iOS and developers.
Yes, I think that this is the year that Apple opens up a lot more of the APIs that have been private, so that third-party developers can start using them.
Some of them, not most of them.
Not most of them. Correct. It will be some of them. But I think the big news on the API front for developers will be offering them Siri integration.
Yeah, I think I agree with you on that. I think that Apple is going to open up Siri to developers this year, probably not until iOS 8.
Yes. My roadmap for this is in the spring at WWDC.
Or summer, as it is.
Apple will announce that Siri support is coming, mm-hmm. and developers will be able to start working on integrating Siri support into their apps, because they'll have early access to the next iOS builds. And then in the late fall, or sometime in the fall, when iOS 8 ships, that's when it's officially available.
Yeah, and I think, though, that Siri access to developers will still be limited compared to what Apple can do. But I think it'll start this year. And I think that Siri will also have her abilities and features. Again, this is more on the Apple only side, but I think that those will expand. I think that Apple's going to show us some interesting improvements with Siri this year.
I agree. I think that 2014 will be the year that, because of what Apple starts doing with Siri, we get several steps closer to the dream of Knowledge Navigator.
Yeah. And Steve rolls over in his grave.
I'm sure he does. However, we've got the iPad, we've got Siri, we've got all of these things that each year they get us a little bit closer to Knowledge Navigator. And it's a brilliant concept. It's a wonderful concept. I really think Apple needs to take us there. And Apple's the company to take us there, and take us there in the right way.
Yeah, for sure. For sure. And I think that the competition between Siri and Google Now is going to be heating up this year. I think as the year progresses, we're going to be seeing both of these companies putting more and more efforts into both of those products, and we, the consumer, will benefit.
Yes. And I love when we, the consumer, benefit.
Mm-hmm. And to that end, iOS is, you know, it's going to be honed, not overhauled, is the way I put it in our notes.
Yes, and I agree, because iOS 7 was the overhaul.
Yeah.
And now that we have the new foundation and the new structure, Apple can start refining and improving and polishing.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Both in terms of refinements to the look and feel. I bet you we get a little bit of a retrenchment on some of the minimalism on the buttons.
Well,
just a little bit of retrenchment.
Yeah, yeah, I
agree. A little bit of a nod to the fact that sometimes seeing a button does help.
Well, some of the rumors are talking about that coming back in updates for iOS 7, so that we'll get to see some of that before iOS 8 even rolls out. But those are the rumors, so we'll have to wait and see.
We'll have to wait and see. And then maps, I think that we're going to see maps continue to improve. Apple's been buying a lot of mapping-related companies in the last 6 months.
Yes, I think that the next year has the potential to be very exciting for Apple's maps offering.
Yeah, I agree. It's gonna be good. It's gonna be good. Well, any other big visions for 2014?
I think we went pretty big already.
I think that we did go pretty big already. Well, Happy New Year, my friend. 2013 was a good year. I think 2014 is going to be a good year for us, too.
Yes.
And I'm looking forward to another year of podcasting with you.
And Happy New Year to you. And I think 2014 is going to be a very exciting year. And I can't imagine not podcasting with you.
Aww. Well, you know, we have so much practice not podcasting.
We do. And yet here we are.
Yet here we are. Yay. Well, on that happy note, take us out.
I can totally do that. And that's this week's Apple Context Machine. If you have anything to comment on, add, or question, write us at acm@macobserver.com. Thanks for listening. Feel free to follow me on Twitter and app.net. I'm Jay Gamet, both places. Also, if you haven't had a chance yet, please go over to the iTunes store and rate our show, because we'd love you for doing that.
We do. We absolutely do. And you can follow me on Twitter at TM O'Brien. Our content is written by the good people at the Mac Observer. Our bandwidth is provided by CashFly. The bass is by Boom. I'm at GeekTales.com. Jeff's at FreshBrewedTales.com. We have all those links in the show notes. The show was recorded. No, wait. The bass is by Boom. I think I already said that, but I didn't mention that it was recorded just for us. And that is all for this week.
And as always, stay subscribed.
We'll see you online at the Mac Observer.